put them up and put them in. Hey, welcome to another edition of In the Coach's Corner, In and Out of Sports. This show is sponsored in part by Horton's Funeral Service, Dr. Edward T. Buford, and the Athletic Republic Capital Region, and as always, powered by the AfricanAmericanAthlete.com. And when we speak of the AfricanAmericanAthlete.com, we're talking about its founder and my producer, my main man, Rick Hampton Sr. Well, without further ado, folks, in the Coach's Corner today, we have another D.C. area legend. This guy was an All-American in high school, All-American in college. Boy, he's won so many rings, a championship in high school, an ACC championship, and an NBA championship. But the biggest ring that he has on his finger, the biggest championship that he's won, is in the game of life and motivating and inspiring people today. Without further ado, let's bring on my main man, the fabulous Adrian Branch. Adrian, my man, how are you?
Hey, Coach, good morning to you. Good morning to you. Well, out here on the West Coast, good morning anyway.
Fantastic. Adrian, before we get into the interview, and as I stated, man, you have just your basketball resume is impeccable. But what you're doing now, and some of our listeners and some of the friends and fans back in the DMV may not be familiar in what you're doing today. So I want to spend a large part of the first segments or so of this interview talking about your inspirational work, your walk in faith, etc. But before we do that, let's talk about the documentary. And I know your phone has been ringing off the hook, texting, etc., to get your thoughts on In the Water, PG Basketball County. Your thoughts?
Well, you know, it's interesting. I love PG. I love home. I love D.C. Folks ask me if I'm from D.C., and all I say is, look, put some go-go on, some Chuck Brown and some crabs, and you're going to see how D.C. I am. But yeah, you know what, Coach? I'm proud of my area. I'm proud of my area. I'm proud of what it's producing as far as the athletes getting their opportunity. And, yeah, they say, oh, man, Uncle A, you weren't in that thing. But you know what, man? I had my turn. I did my best. I'm proud of what's in the record books. But, again, it's like a broken record to me. It's like, man, I love home, and I love the people from home.
And let the listeners know who may not be aware, home, you know, people know you at DeMatha, then Maryland University, and, of course, with the Lakers. But, see, I go back, you were the pride of St. Margaret's Elementary School.
St. Margaret's, Sheep Pleasant, Maryland. Yeah, my story is one where my mom and dad are from Deanwood, Sheriff Road. So their backyards touched, connected to each other. My dad is the oldest of five. My mom is the fourth oldest of 11. So big old Catholic family, brother. They just got some children.
That's right.
I got close to probably 40 first cousins on both sides of the family. Dad and mom were doing it. They went across the D.C. line to Sheep Pleasant. So right from Sheriff Road to George Palmer Highway, which is now Martin Luther King. And so we grew up there and at Sheep Pleasant. But all those memories, Coach, of what made me, the successes and challenges made me of what I am today or what I try to be today.
And let's talk a little more about the Family Foundation, man. I've always had great love, respect, and admiration for the Branch family, with your whole family, your parents, your siblings, et cetera. Talk about that foundation that they've laid for you.
Well, it was interesting. On my grandfather, and I knew my parents' parents. I knew my grandparents on both sides. So on my mom's side, Everett Lee Jeffries, I got an invitation to play with the Harlem Globetrotters. back in the day. But he was raising kids, so by the time he was 28, he already had four or five kids, and he couldn't stop doing what he was doing. So on my grandfather's side, he was a heck of an athlete with baseball and basketball. Then my dad went to Spingarn with a name we both know well, Harold Bell, and Elgin Bell in Spingarn when John Tresvant, when those guys were coming through. So my dad was a football player at 6'6".
Right.
He had a presence in our life, you know. He was a big angry black man. He wasn't having it, so hard coaching didn't bother me, you know. Let me
no question.
Being a hard coach, I was like, man, I got somebody bigger, blacker, angry sitting at home. This is a piece of cake.
That's right.
And then my two older brothers, Tommy Branch, Charles Jr. Tommy, we called him Tommy. He played at DeMatha with Wittenberg and Lowe, won a national championship in '78. They were 28-0 and had a scholarship to Old Dominion, played there for a couple of years. My brother Phil went to Shepherd College. He transferred out from, because we were in Seat Pleasant and got bussed down to Bowie High School and got a scholarship to Shepherd College and was an all-conference, all-tournament player. So by the time I was through, this is what really got me, Coach. You know, my pops, left-handed, 6'6", just rough, man, just a rough cat. So I remember one day, and my brothers are well-liked, man. They weren't bullies or gorillas. They were just nice guys.
That's
I remember my dad saying at Seat Pleasant, he said, look, if one of y'all fight, all of y'all got to fight. And I was starting to figure, I said, hold on. My brother Tom is 3 years older. He got to go first. Phil second. Oh, I got it made. I'm going to talk all the trash I want to talk because I got my two brothers. I got to fight. So that started a life of communication. I didn't even know which would lead to radio and television.
No question, folks. In the coach's corner, boy, you talk about having charisma and color. None better than Adrian Branch. And Adrian, as I stated, we'll come back to basketball, get your thoughts on the game today. But I want to now focus on the other side of Adrian Branch, the side that some of our listeners may not be aware of, and the great work that you're doing today. But talk about the origin of the work and what led you to it.
Well, it was interesting. You know, coming out of DeMatha High School, you know, like you said, I had the high school dunk of the year. Whoa, sorry, I'm walking there. Coach, you might hear the train. So I had the high school dunk of the year coming down on the fast break. It's against McNamara. So then
right.
You talked about the Somerville family and Todd Bozeman.
That's right.
So George Michael Sports, was there in the gym that day. And I came down on a fast break, two defenders, surprised them at the free throw line, throwing it off the backboard, catching and dunking it. Bang! That play was the high school dunk of the year, shown all over the country. But that didn't do anything for my reputation because they said it takes a lot of mustard to cover that hot dog. And so I was, man, during my early years at DeMatha, a ringleader instead of a team leader. I knew right from wrong, but I just liked being a little edgy, just going on the other side, you know. And then at Maryland, the scholarship with Maryland, in my 4 years, what led me to answer your question, what led me to do what I'm doing today, four-bedroom apartment. Everybody's got their own bedroom and a four-bedroom apartment. In my 4 years at Maryland, one roommate got kicked off the team for smoking marijuana. Another one got kicked off for driving to pick up marijuana. Another one got accused of rape at the University of Maryland. And then our beloved, beloved, beloved Len Bias died of cocaine. Come on, man. You're kidding me. And so I look back on my life. I was the teammate driving them to pick up some stinking drugs. I look back on my life when I finished playing basketball, pro basketball, and said, man, here's an opportunity to speak to kids. Here's an opportunity to speak to communities and to say, hey, it's not a crime in your life if you fall down. It's a crime in your life if you stay down. You got to get up. And so that's what my passion is, Coach. Hey, kids can sniff out a fraud. So if you're going into a school assembly, but by the time you go through that front door, to the podium, they're already making assessments on whether you're real or not. Keep it real. Keep it 100, you know. Keep it true blue for me. And so that's been my passion. That's been my passion to be like, yeah, I've had some successes, but the greatest success, man, is to try to encourage and inspire folks, man. Are you doing your best? Are you living your best? Are you thinking your best? It's not corny and tacky, man, but it's a life that matters. And so that's where my passion is.
Adrian Branch is in a coach's corner. And Adrian, also, you had mentioned great Catholic family, going through Catholic school. But you had, and we hear this term quite often, some people understand, some people have their own interpretation, but you had an epiphany, or you were saved. Talk about your spirituality and your faith that led you to what you're doing now.
Yeah, it was interesting. It was interesting because, you know, went to Catholic school all my life. In fact, on the Jeffries family, my grandmother used to feed the meals to the priest. And my Uncle Paul, who played with Austin Carr down in Macon, they're a big old Catholic family. And one of my aunts, who's a twin, is a nun. So I always felt better. I always knew right from wrong and always felt better coming out of church. Well, in 1993, I'm 30 years old. I'm in Australia. And because of the world championship ring with the LA Lakers, I was considered the most decorated player in the history of Australia. So that's Ben Simmons' dad. I'm playing against Ben Simmons, who's with Philadelphia. I'm playing against his dad. And his dad is a big cross between Larry Johnson and Anthony Mason. Ooh, he was alone.
Yeah.
And so I'm playing against those guys. Dante Exum's dad, Cecil Exum, that played, and also Jonah Bolden, father Bruce Bolden. So that second generation who's now in the NBA, I played against all their fathers. Well, I'm the most decorated player with that NBA championship, and the Aussies hated me, and I hated them. And so at 30 years old, Coach, I'm like, I'm going to beat up every Australian, all 2 million Australians in Australia, because I hate them. But, of course, that wasn't the case. And but the Lord was allowing pressure. The Lord was allowing heartbreak for me to make a decision. So I'm searching. I'm looking at Mariana Williamson's New Age. I'm reading L. Ron Hubbard's Dianetics. And I've always heard of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad and all of that because some of my family relatives on my dad's side are Muslim. Nobody, not knocking anybody, but my teammate who we both know, Mike Morrison, that went to Northwestern High School. He was a teammate of mine from D.C. area and said, Adrian, man, God's not impressed with your championship ring, bro. Put it down. God's not impressed that you got an MVP trophy over the great Michael Jordan when you two were East-West High School All-American teammates.
Right.
And Michael scored 30 points and you scored 24 points and got the MVP trophy. Put it down. He's not impressed that you got an MVP with Maryland team MVP and played with the great Len Bias in the ACC championship first time in 29 or 30 years. Put it down. And, Coach, that day, man, for me, I went from religion 18 inches to a relationship with God through Jesus. Picked up my Bible and started
calling. Oh, hold it right there, Agent. Hold it right there because I want you to expound on that through your eyes, your interpretation. The difference between being religious and having a relationship with your Savior.
Yeah, you know what? Religion is man's way of trying to reach God. But relationship is vertical. Think about this. The cross is vertical, God reaching down to a sinful man that can't save himself, and then it's relational, the other side of the cross, is man relating to man. Because what's the whole Bible? Sums up, 66 books of the Bible sum up to this. Love God and love others. That's it.
That's
so
it.
The vertical part is man loving God. You're looking up, loving God. That's the vertical part of the cross. And then the horizontal is man loving man. That's the whole thing right there, Coach. And so that's what I tried to come into a relationship with, man, just a personal relationship. Man, I still got junk in my trunk. I ain't what I ought to be, but I darn sure ain't what I used to be. And so I started to make gains. I started to feel age appropriate. I started to think the right way, started to behave the right way, and started to let go of this. I just learned this a few years ago, narcissism, that it's not about you. It's not about you. It's about sharing the planet. It's about being the change you want to see. And so I'm on fire about that, Coach. I love what I'm trying to become. I'll tell you this story real quick that
sure.
really summarizes my walk with Jesus or what I try to do. There's a story of a gentleman named Whitaker. It's not Charles Whitaker, but his name is Whitaker, last name Whitaker. The year I was born, 1963, he became the first American to climb Mount Everest. Well, the interviewer asked him in his later life, was that your greatest accomplishment, being the first American in 63 to climb Mount Everest? And he said, no, my greatest accomplishment was taking 50 others to the summit and climbing Everest. So taking others was his greatest accomplishment. And so for me and for you, for what you're doing and trying to live a life that matters and giving a darn, it's not about ourselves. It's a lot of fun. I enjoy it. You live in the moment with it. But it's about trying to help others and rally others and inspire others to be all they can be. And so that's where my passion is.
Agent, tell the story to our listeners where you were trying to find yourself. And you would say you would get on the bus, and with the strong believers on the team, you would sit up in front of the bus and drink a Coke. But then you wanted to blend in, and you would go to the back of the bus and drink a cold beer. Talk about that struggle to find yourself before you are, where you are today.
Well, that's interesting. In 86, I was a teammate with A.C. Green. So A.C. Green is the Iron Man. He's the Cal Ripken Jr. of pro basketball. Cal Ripken,
yes.
of course, played in over 2,100 games without missing a game, broke Lou Gehrig's record. A.C. Green played in 10 years straight, over 1,100 games without missing a game. And so in 86, I came to the Lord in 93, 7 years later. So in 86, A.C. said, Adrian, you got to stop fornicating. And I never heard what that word is. I was like, wow, fornicating, that's a big word. Do you make cookies out of that? What is that? Okay, hey, fornicate. I don't know what the heck that word means, Coach. You know? So I'm telling my girlfriend at the time, AC says, we need to stop fornicating. And she says, tell him to shut up and mind his own business. So I'm like, all right, whatever. Sin has his fun for a season. So, I mean, real talk. So, 86, I go to, I'm with the Lakers, Showtime, Magic Johnson, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, James Worthy, Pat Riley, Kurt Rambis, Clay Thompson's dad, Michael Thompson. So on the front of the bus with Ace, I drink a Coke. And Ace was a good guy, man. Ace was clean cut. He was straight as an arrow. He was a preacher. So I'd sit on the front of the bus with Ace and drink a Coke. But on the back of the bus were some of my wild friends. I ain't going to put nobody's name out there.
No.
Wes Matthews. Our beloved Wes. And I drink a beer. Now, it's not illegal, or whether it's legal or illegal, to drink a beer over 21, but it was the commitment. It's the commitment to focus. It's the commitment to being consistent. It's the commitment of being who you say you're going to be. So on the back of the bus, 23 years old, Coach, Sea Pleasant, Maryland. I'm in D.C. This is right before Spriggy Wiggy. Spriggy Wiggy just left Larry Spriggs. He was out there for years.
My man.
Man,
yep.
I'm like, getting it in, baby. I'm getting it in. Hi. Holla at your boy. The roof is on fire. All of that stuff. So, AC, one day, I come to the front of the bus, and I'm like, yeah, Ace, I like my beer ice cold. And he says, Adrian, what's that in your hand? Nothing. Nothing, Ace. Amen, brother. Amen. Thank you, Jesus. What time is Bible study? And Ace pulled my coat, seeing that I was living two different lives, you know, acting amening on Sunday, but acting buck wild on Monday. And he pulls me to the side, and he says, Adrian, you got to make a decision on whether you're going to be fixed up or whether you're going to be mixed up. And I couldn't answer that question until 7 years later in 1993 when I said, man, I'm all in. I said, once I, because my image of a believer was two things. I got to wear some corny suits and listen to some real stupid, corny music. But that's far from the truth as a believer, man. As a believer, now that I come to the Lord, they love to pray and then eat. And if I had known that, I would have been a believer a long time ago, brother.
And,
after they pray, they love to eat.
And I believe that the Lord calls us to look good and to dress well, because you can't bring anybody into the fold looking bad.
Oh,
now that's,
wow.
That's just how the coach sees it.
Amen. Amen, coach. And so, but that's a liar. And so there's a spiritual battle of the adversary, Satan, the accuser of the brethren, God's sworn enemy, that comes to steal, kill, and divide. So he comes in and tells us all the deeds. He calls us dumb. He calls us to be in doubt, to be in despair, to be depressed, to be disconnected, all the deeds until it ultimately leads to death. But when you're in Christ, man, greater is he that's in us than he that's in the world. So you get a new song. So you start dancing when there ain't no music. Why? Because the joy of the Lord is your strength. Because you know, man, that if I look to the hills where my strength cometh, my Redeemer lives. And so that's where my passion is. But our adversary wants to disconnect us. He wants to divide. He wants to steal, kill, and always say you're not enough. Tell you you're not strong enough. You're not tall enough, short enough, slim enough, trim enough, cute enough, brute enough, black enough, white enough, street enough, elite enough, rich enough, poor enough to roll with him. Rule and rule, do and do, but at the cross of Jesus, already done. Woo! Hallelujah.
My man, Adrian Branch is in the coach's corner. And Adrian, let's go back that you hit on earlier. And you talked about how, and this is so important if we have some of the younger aspiring ball players listening, how without a doubt you were gifted, you were talented, you were one of the best coming out of high school and at the collegiate level, but your attitude at the time. And talk about at the collegiate level, how your attitude hindered your draft status.
Oh, it did. It did, Coach. That's well said. I had such a reputation. One thing about our beloved Adrian Dantley was not the tallest, wasn't the fastest, wasn't the most gifted, but doggone if he didn't have a pit bull attitude of working and becoming an overachiever. And he didn't take anything for granted, didn't take days off and didn't take anything for granted. And lo and behold, he led the NBA in scoring. And lo and behold, he's in the Hall of Fame because of a work ethic. For me, it came easy to me. And this is a summary of where it was. Johnny Dawkins, our hometown guy that we're so proud of, Coach Johnny Dawkins, we're on Georgia Avenue. And he's like, A.B., I was in his wedding, so we're all close. He played at Mac, and I'm at DeMatha, but we're all close. And he says, A.B., come on, man, let's go work on our game. And my junior year in college, I'm like, working out is for scrubs. You need it. Well, Johnny Dawkins becomes the 10th player in the draft with Coach K's blessing and a co-player of the year with Len Bias. I become a 42nd round draft pick, second round 46th pick with a lot of question marks. And it's because of attitude, Coach. Not taking advantage of your opportunities, taking things for granted, being casual with it. And that's just flat out wrong. Man, does LeBron James have to apologize for being LeBron James? Of course not. Does Kevin Durant have to apologize for being Kevin Durant, a world champion, max play player? Absolutely not. But those guys, like all of us, have to be responsible. You don't have to apologize, but you got to be responsible with the gifts and opportunity. And I wasn't responsible with that. So I would say for these guys, aspiring athletes, man, never be afraid of failure and never, ever be afraid of success. Don't be afraid. Go out there and give it your best. And then there's only one question you ever have to ask yourself every day. Did I do my best? Woo, that's hard right there, Coach, when you judge yourself. Man, did I give it my best? Did I give it my best attitude and effort and practice and shoot around and film study on the court, off the court? Did I do my absolute best? Man, if you could say that, you will be productive and proud of the life that you're trying to lead.
Adrian Branch in the Coach's Corner. And Adrian, you had mentioned something that I often speak on. People talk about failure, but in most cases, success is far more difficult to handle than failure. Talk a little bit more about that.
Yeah, in your life, you're going to fall down. In your life, it's not a crime if you fall down. It's a crime if you stay down. So you'll fall down, but it's the champion that gets back up. And it's the champion that can stay up, because it's one thing to get to the top of the mountain, to get to the top of your game, but it's another thing to stay there. And I think one way that you stay there, one way you get there is hard work. Sweat is the cologne of accomplishment. You've
like
got to be able to work hard.
Say it again, oh, hey, say it again.
Oh, man, I'm going to charge you one time. Coach, I'm going to charge you on this one. But sweat is the cologne of accomplishment. So get your sweat on. Just like, man, if you're trying to impress a girl back in the day and you're at the dance club and you just get your sweat on. Oh, yeah, man, cutting the rug, acting a fool. So you're working hard. You've got to work hard. Pat Riley would say, as far as climbing the mountain, he says, hard work doesn't guarantee you anything, but without it, you don't stand a chance.
Wow.
So hard work doesn't guarantee you anything, but without it, you don't stand a chance. So you've got to work hard. Then as you ascending the mountain, you got to stay humble with it. Stay humble. Stay curious. The two most curious people in our lifetime, and I never met them, was Michael Jackson, the great Michael Jackson, the performer. He just had an insatiable appetite on being curious with music, with acoustics, with arrangements. And then we saw that he became Michael Jackson. The other was the great Albert Einstein. They said that Albert Einstein said, I'm not smarter than anyone else. I am just insatiably curious. ESPN tells us this. I love this about ESPN, the network I've been privileged to work for the last, 13, 14 years. They say, be curious. Talk about Maryland, Duke, UCLA, Kansas. Talk about them like you've never heard of them before. So typically in a week of sports, you always cover the top 10 or the local sports. And they say, be curious. So talk about Mark Turgeon. You know, celebrate these athletes or so like you've never heard of them. That way you may pick up something you haven't seen before. So hard work is everything, Coach, climbing the mountain. Staying humble. It's hard to fall when you're always on your knees. Joe climbing the mountain. Joe Frazier, God bless him, God rest his soul, mumbled to us one time. I got a chance to meet him when he came to D.C. a few times. He said, well, Henry came in, all I did was work out and pray. Can you text it to me?
So, hey, man, that's a great combination. And, of course, your great coach, Morgan Wooten, used to say that the elevator to success is always out of order. You got to take the steps.
My goodness. So you can't gimmick. There you go, Coach. I remember that. And so you can't gimmick success. You've got to work hard. Now, once you stay there, once you get there, it's a humility, it's a curiosity, and then put your ego, put your pride on the side and say, okay, who is Coach McAdams? Who am I today? Who is Adrian Branch today? And how can I get better? If you hear LeBron, he always says, I'm just trying to get better. Tom Brady, they're always talking about in practice, we're trying to get better. And I believe them. These dudes are like that. So success is not accidental. It's intentional. And like you said, we're coach, the winningest coach in the history of high school basketball. The elevator to success is out of order. You got to take.
And John Wooden, the other great legendary coach, used to say, that it's what you learn after you know it
after
all.
After you know it
that
all.
That counts.
Woo.
That's right. Adrian Branch is in the Coach's Corner. And, Adrian, let's talk about, man, you have a saying, and I love it. I love it, folks. Hear this, and Adrian will expound on it. But when you give your motivational talks, you talk about, and I'm paraphrasing, we weren't born winners. We weren't born losers. We were born choosers. Talk about it.
Yeah, you're not born a winner or a loser. You're born a chooser. You're not born a winner or a loser. You're born a chooser. First make your choice, then your choices make you. So in our great country of America, we have the ability to make choices. And one of the greatest choices you can do, you can choose to be a knucklehead. You can choose to be a saint, sinner, pimp, prostitute. You can choose to be street elite, odds in family or friends. So you got a myriad of choices that you can make. Now, the thing is, whatever choice you make comes with consequences. Whatever choice you make comes with the road that you're going to have to travel. And so one of the biggest things with talking to kids, a lot of times they don't want to be told what to do, but this is what happened for me. Let me encourage you with this one. This is what happened, and the greatest thing you can do is make a choice. My greatest choosing Jesus Christ to be my best friend, my Lord, my Savior. And then one of the other greatest choices I made was to go to DeMatha High School to have some coaching. Now, I wasn't always listening to the coach, but, you know, more. But when I got out, I would say, God damn, what coach say? What coach say? What coach say? And just like you said, hey, man, the elevator and the steps, or God first, family second, school third, basketball
right.
fourth. So it's our job as coaches, as leaders, as encouragers, as what they say in young people nowadays, as influencers, more things are caught than taught. A lot of times, kids might have their hats cocked sideways, they're sagging, they're like, man, whatever, yo, man, I ain't trying to hear that, yeah. But the thing is, keep laying it out there. Keep laying it out there. Christ laid out examples. Christ laid out parables. I give you an example. I wash these feet so that you can wash other people. I give you an example of love. More things a lot of times after they may be, it's like a horse turning sideways. The horse is prancing sideways, but it's still going down the street straight. You know what I mean? So it's our job to keep laying that message out there. Keep being that example. Keep being the change you want to see. A lie sprints, but truth has endurance. What is your truth? Well, let every man be a liar, that God be true. And so that is something each day, inch by inch. Morgan Wooten would say, life's a cinch, yard by yard, it's really hard. And so hopefully you make that choice. You become what you hang around. You know, you hang around with champs, you become a champ. Hang around with nuts, you become a nut. So be careful with the choices that you make, because your choices will make you. And then how many times have we heard this on the trail, Coach? Show me the five friends you have and show me the books you read, and I'll show you your life and your destiny.
That's
show
right.
me the friends you hang around and the books you read, and I'll show you your life and your destiny.
Wow. Adrian Brandt in the Coach's Corner. And, Adrian, let's talk a little more about choices. As you stated earlier, you made a poor choice in driving a friend to a place you should not have been in. And, of course, God rest his soul, the great Lynn Bias, very poor choice. Speak on those two situations.
Yeah, sometimes you don't get a chance. Sometimes you don't get a second chance. You know, for Lenny, it was heartbreaking, a second chance. And for me at the time, I was casual. I was casual with my gifts. I was casual with my opportunities. I was casual about letting the wrong people get too close to me. And the same way with Lenny. Lenny, as strong as he was, could be influenced. And we let the wrong people get too close to us. Man, we were athletes. We were fast-tracked to be NBA players. We were fast-tracked to be student athletes. Man, the world was ours. The world is the oyster. It's your gem. And what it was is you get casual with your gifts. And so you get people that's around you that should not be around you. You get influences around you that should not be around you. And for Lenny, he didn't get that second chance. He didn't get a chance to grow to middle age, to grow to be 56. We're a day apart. So I'm 57. I'm November 17th. He's November 18th, 1963. He didn't get that chance. So he'll forever be young and caught in that decision that took his life. Heartbreaking story, Coach. Heartbreaking. Now, for me, I stand on a lot of times, even speaking in prisons, a lot of times I speak to the inmates, the difference between them and me is they got caught and I didn't.
Wow.
And wow. Does that make you any better? Absolutely not. But I'm going to take advantage of my opportunities, and that's where I'm going to try to encourage somebody. Whitaker, Mount Everest, 1963. Hey, man, come on, let's climb this mountain together. Hey, man, you know what? This is what happened to me. God made a difference in my life, and sober judgment is not just for Alcoholics Anonymous. Sober judgment is for people that can think clearly and make decisions in a sobriety environment. In thought, in deed, and action. Woo, I'm preaching to myself now, Coach.
Man, you're on a roll, Adrian Branch. And Adrian, let's talk some hoops now. Man, you were, first of all, on the court with Len Bias, Michael Jordan, so many of the great players in the ACC in the early to mid-'80s. Talk about the ACC in the 80s.
Oh, my goodness. First of all, you had an opportunity for those rivalries to mature in age. So James Worthy, first player in the draft, Hall of Famer at North Carolina, 6'9 forward, my teammate with the Lakers, he's at North Carolina. So when I come into the league, he had a full beard, and he was already a grown man.
That's right.
Full effect. And I'm like, ooh, man, this ain't O'Connell no more. I'm in the big league. You know?
Hey, Adrian. Adrian, I saw something where Dennis Rodman was like 21 or 22 as a freshman in college.
John Thompson, you can play Ed Spriggs. So, you know, John kept him old too now. So, yeah, he could have fit in with Georgetown with the old cats. Oh, so Ralph Sampson, National Player of the Year, 7'4", 4-year senior. My brother-in-law, Big Thurl Bailey, 6'11", national champion. Wittenberg and Lowe, you know Wittenberg, and when you see him, tell him I was talking about him, you know they were every bit the same age as Craig Shelton. They were 28, you know, in 12th grade, too. They was old. You tell him I said they was old. They were grown men. So the ACC were grown men. You had guys that were there for 3 years under the best coaching and best league. And so before you got to the pros, it was already many pros with these dudes. So I'm a freshman. Buck Williams just went hardship, and I was sorry to see that one. Buck went third player in the draft back in 81 and was rookie of the year. But the ACC had veterans, man. You had Muggsy Bogues, Nate McMillan. Oh, my goodness. I'm trying to remember some more names out here. Len Bias, Michael Jordan, Brad Daugherty,
yeah.
Sam Longarm Perkins,
yeah.
And then some of the greatest coaches. And so I was very, very privileged to be able to be on that stage and compete with those guys because all of them just played. Michael Jordan, very, very competitive. Didn't talk a lot of trash. He did it older as when he was in the NBA. But that dude just played. And I was watching Lenny because I was watching those 30 for 30s, and I was just watching him as an ESPN analyst. I said, okay, let me act like I've never heard of Len Bias before. And as I look back 30 years later, one thing Lenny could do, Coach, is live in the moment. He didn't overanalyze what he was going to do. He's going to get it, 1-2 dribbles, up and shoot it. He was going to rebound. He was going to dunk. He was like Mad Max. He's just going to get it. And he didn't overanalyze the game plan. So, man, as I look back, I was privileged to be in that number. And, you know, I got a lot of pain to show for it, too. So that's why I'm low impact now. I drink a V8 and drive a V8.
talk about your coach, Lefty Giselle. We had him on a couple of weeks ago. And I told him what you had said, that he was angry at halftime and the non-contact. And his response was, well, you know, Adrian's a good talker, so he may say anything.
Yeah, what it was, we were playing Penn State, and I used to hate those football schools, Illinois, the Big Ten. Now we're in the Big Ten. But, you know, the football schools, basketball players were built like football players. So they all just like wrestlers, man, just gnarling at you. So we're playing Penn State. And Penn State wasn't good. They were good this year, NCAA and Coach Chambers. I love that guy. So I was so happy for him. But this is when Penn State was some scrubs. And so we're losing. This is a big game down at the Baltimore Civic Center. And the mayor was there. The governor was there. They had the salute to arms was there. This was a big deal because Maryland is the big state school. I like how they used to have preseason and one or two games they would play around the different parts of the country so that the fans could rally around the state school.
Sure.
Well, we're losing at halftime. And the left hand comes in and say, you bunch of sissies, nothing but sissies. Hermanville, defensive player of the year, one rebound. Ben Coleman, 6'9", 240 pounds, one rebound. Mark Fothergill, 6'9", 235 pounds, two rebounds. And he used to say Len's name, Len Bison, he used to just say his full name. Leonard, nothing. Oh, hell. Ain't none of y'all got girlfriends. You afraid of contact.
He was pretty colorful. Hey, give us one more Coach Lefty Drizzell story, man, because between you and the left-hander, both of y'all were left-handers. Man, I don't know. I don't know if we could write a script or a movie with the two of you.
Well, Coach was like a nudist. Coach was like a nudist. Coach would come in, you know, the coach's locker room on one side and then our locker room. And Coach would come in butterball naked. So you got a bald head, bald gut, and bald rear end. He's just bald. He come in and left-handed. And so he's just coming in as a nudist, and he got the remote control. And these are the big, like, you know, the remote control is like a brick that you can put your iced tea on.
Right, right.
So he butterball naked, used his left hand, scratched his butt, put his hand back on the remote control and tossed it to Sherman Dillon and say, Sherman, try to get that dang blank tape on there. I can't get this thing on there. Sherman turned white as a ghost, looking at us and said, this naked man just scratched his butt and threw a big 5-pound recording thing at me and wants me to catch it after he does scratch his butt. Oh, you can't make that stuff up, Coach.
Oh, man. Hey, another one of my favorite Lefty Drizzell stories, of course. My good friend, and this may have been a little bit after you or before you, but my good friend who is the coach of my old school, Chuck Drizzell, the coach's son, for one reason or another, Coach put Chuck in against North Carolina to make the last shot of the game. Chuck gets it, drives to the basket, thinks he has a clear path, and Michael Jordan comes out of nowhere, pins the shot. And then at the end of the game, during the interview, and they asked Coach Dean Smith about it, Coach Smith says, Coach Drizzell must really have a lot of confidence in his son.
I remember that. We were 4 years together. I remember that. God bless him. I remember that play. I'll give you another one where he said that. God bless him and Pete Holbert, man. That was just a little too much for him at that time. So we're warming up at Duke. And Coach finds a penny. So he's like, I found me a penny. This is real lucky. We're going to win this game. So we go, man. Lenny or myself take a shot, miss it, lose the game. He looks at this penny, throws it across the court, say, you ain't lucky at all. You ain't worth a damn dime.
Oh, boy. Unbelievable. All right. Now, let's talk about your transition from the ACC to the NBA and your time with the Lakers. And you are a member of what can be said arguably one of the greatest, if not the greatest team ever. Talk about your experience in Tinseltown with, with Showtime, Magic Johnson.
Oh, my goodness. It was everything you can imagine. It was Showtime of the L.A. Forum. Magic, 6'9", booming personality, charisma, getting after it. He was the MVP that year. Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, who I have as the greatest of all time, him and Bill Russell, 40 years old and hooking them, had tree trunk legs. He used to read a War and Peace book. So in the locker room, Kareem would be fully stretched out with his legs crossed on the seat. He'd read he'd pick up on a 1,000-page volume book, really, really intelligent. And he didn't warm up an hour before the game, like you see people shooting around. So he would just read, just relaxing himself. Then Pat Riley would come in at like 5 minutes to 7 or something before you go out and say, okay, let's go, man. Kareem would do about 4 different yoga stretches and go out there and give him 20 years in the league in the all-time leading score. The Lakers were so good that they governed themselves. So Pat Riley, Magic was the coach on the floor. They were very, very efficient in practice, defensive assignments, everybody was locked in. Offensive assignments, and in the NBA, you practice offense a lot because you have 24 seconds to get a shot off. So that's one of the biggest things I learned in the NBA at the time. It's like, wow, they always on the offensive end because they have to make sure they get themselves a good possession every time down. They were everything you were looking for professionally on the floor, intelligent, competitive, efficient. And my thinking, Coach, was if I'm there 1 year or 10 years, let me learn everything I can about them because this is the best of the best. And one thing you learn as a pro is they get a routine, whatever that routine is. Kareem read in the locker room. Magic would go out and play a little horse game. He never really shoot his game shots. He just play horse games to relax them. And you eat 4 hours before a game, take a pregame nap. And so you learn to develop a routine, and that has really helped me with those principles and examples in my adulthood.
Wow. And talk about the rival with the Boston Celtics. In order to be a champion, you've got to have a great opponent, a great adversary. You talk about Joe Frazier. Of course, Frazier wouldn't be Frazier without Ali. On and on. But talk about the Celtics and the Lakers back then.
Well, it was so intense. So you're playing in June. And Old Red, a D.C. native, God bless Old Red, he would turn the heat up. So we had heat up. So it was like 120 up there in the locker room, man. You getting Gatorade. You give me Gatorade. You ain't drinking Gatorade for yourself. You give me Gatorade to your slacks and your shirt because they dehydrated. It was so hot in there. And so the intensity of the rivalry, I'm the 12th man on the team. I got the best seat in the house. I'm like, woo, I don't know if I want any of this one today, brother. This is for grown men only. And these jokers would play so hard, and they were so advanced. And one thing I'll say about a champion, you look at all of them. You look at LeBron. You look at Tom Brady. You look at whoever the champions, Michael Jordan. Before you get with them physically, you've got to get in their airspace mentally. Larry Bird, these guys are so intelligent, Coach. If you can't think the game and you can't play chess with them because they're playing chess when everyone else is playing checkers, you don't stand a chance. If you're just there to run and jump and dunk, you're not coming close with those guys. Dwayne Wade, these dudes are so intelligent that you've got to get in their space mentally and emotionally before you can ever take on the challenge physically.
Wow. And talk about how, as you just stated, the mental aspect is so important. I've always said, in order to complete a task successfully, you've got to envision in your mind before you attempt the task of completing it successfully, whether it's a sport, whether it's a job, et cetera. You have to envision doing it before you actually do it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think about this, one of our own DC's own, Sugar Ray Leonard as well. Sugar Ray, I thought one thing with him and Thomas Hearns, I thought he could think the game a little more than Thomas Hearns, which would outlast him. So one thing with the mental, and then think about this. Give you one more answer to that question. they were, if you hear a great one retire, I can't do it anymore. I'm not there emotionally. It's the emotional toll. Even in game seven with Jordan when his dad died, or that last championship, and he broke down because of the emotional capacity. Because we deal with an IQ and an EQ. And the EQ is your emotional quotient, what you can handle emotionally. And a lot of times people get fatigued not from their intelligence, but from their emotional capacity. Their EQ is not in balance with their IQ. Well, anyway, go back to that question you just – oh, preparation. So watch this, Coach. So ESPN, you know, as I'm trying to be a consistent announcer, and I love the media examples like yourself, Glenn Harris, Harold Bell, Doc Walker, you know, yeah, our own beloved crew in D.C., and I'm trying to, Mike Wilbon, find my own consistency, I came up with this one, which I believe to be true. Preparation determines presentation. Preparation determines presentation. So all that's saying is what's done in darkness comes to light. You know, piss poor performance keeps you prepared from, I like that one with all the P's, but preparation determines presentation. So you've got to prepare. You've got to prepare. You've got to think like a champ, act like a champ, walk like a champ, talk like a champ, smell like a champ, behave like a champ. And even when you're just sitting there in your quiet time, you know who you are and whose you are. You're a champion. You're an overcomer. And when potholes and obstacles come at you, you'll be ready to respond in an appropriate measure.
We've got a few minutes left, maybe two or three more questions, because this is – you and I could talk all day, and, man – I was so excited about the interview, Adrian Branch. Adrian, looking at the world today and the social injustice, police brutality, now people who weren't on board initially are saying, wait a minute, this Kaepernick guy, he had something. He was on to something. In your opinion, professional athletes, you are a former professional athlete at the highest level. What responsibility, if any, do they have to speak out on injustice across the country and across the world?
Well, I learned this to that question. I learned this my junior year at Maryland when I got arrested for drugs. And I had to go up before the judge. And the judge said to me, to whom much is given, much is also required.
Wow.
Much is also expected. So for me, I would say on my platform and my own voice, Coach, I'm going to continue to try to be just like you. I'm going to continue to try to be the change that I want to see. So if I want some kindness, I'm going to try to be kind to somebody. If I want some goodwill, I'm going to show some goodwill to others. I'm not being passive about it, but I'm going to try to use the teachings of Christ, where he tried to love other people and he tried to live a life that matters. And if that's too hard and too heavy for folks, the example of Barack Obama, my goodness, just 4 short years ago or so, Barack, most people who are wealthy and Anglo-Saxon, or that term, if they're born with a silver spoon in their mouth, they're already on third base.
Right.
So for Barack, you look at him, he wasn't even in the parking lot. His father was African. His mom is white. He got a funny name nobody can pronounce. He's growing up in Hawaii. This dude wasn't on first base. He wasn't even in the dugout. He was sitting out there outside of the gate. And yet he became the change he wanted to see. He was a community organizer. He served people. He got educated. He overcame criticism. And lo and behold, he became president of the United States. So I would say, man, we're without excuse. We don't have an excuse. Is it hard? Oh, absolutely. Do we get dealt from the bottom of the deck? Certainly. There are a lot of reasons, but there ain't no excuse, Coach. We can get it done. Collectively, we are better than singularly.
And Adrian, talk about yet another transition, which you are just doing such a great job. You alluded several times to your work currently with ESPN. How did that happen? And take us through a normal day of preparation for ESPN television and radio.
Well, it's interesting. Way back when Kwame Brown was with the Bullets and Shaq and Kobe. So this was about 2000 when they were the champions, 2003 or so. And Shaq and Kobe came to town and just blew out the Bullets by about 40. So in talk time after a game, you usually have 2 minutes. Hey, that was a great game. You know, Kobe Bryant had 20 points. Okay, good night from, you know, the arena. Well, we had like 35 minutes of talk time, which is like a whole bunch. It's like a Sermon on the Mount. And so my producer came to me and said, hey, Adrian, dust off your Lakers stories because we got a lot of talk time. Well, I'm telling my old stories, front of the bus, back of the bus, you know, you're not born a winner or loser. And I get a call from a guy, Dan Steer, from ESPN. He said, hey, this is Dan Steer from ESPN. We were watching you in the stadium. And I'm so green to it. I'm looking around like, where's ESPN? I'm looking around like, what's their booth? But, you know, they got cameras. That, you know what I mean? I had no idea. And really, Coach, I was actually using the media. I had no pursuit. I had no desire to pursue a career. I just wanted to do it to get access to schools and churches because that was my primary calling as an inspirational speaker. But that led to that opportunity. It's been a great, great opportunity. And come on, man, we would do this for free. We're talking
Absolutely.
Sports. This is what we love. You're talking people. You want to encourage. So it's great. It's a great opportunity, but you got to work hard and stay humble with it.
Talk about the preparation because, again, anything that looks easy
yeah.
is because, as you stated, you put the time in to make it look easy. So talk to us about the preparation.
What it is what I would do, you get your notes from the SID, Sports Information Director, and he tells you, like University of Maryland, okay, the leading scorer, Cowan, his now 1,000-point score. So, but also, don't stop there. Talk to the radio person. See if you can talk to the relative. See if you can talk to an AAU coach. And if you've got them 3 or 4 times, whatever you do, because after I have a game, I keep those notes. So you're building a library. So if you come back, if you call Maryland November 1, then you can come back and say, hey, back when you – and you have them in January. Hey, back in November, they were only shooting 4 out of 10 three-pointers. Now they've been on fire, and they haven't missed. So the same thing, you build a library when you get information. Because, like I said, the police detective, you're only as good as your leads. And that's the same way as you're preparing for a game. You're only as good as the information you gather and how you're curious to gather that information.
Do you prefer the broadcast, doing the color, or in the studio? I love you in the studio, man.
Yeah, I've enjoyed it both. However, when I first got offered a job, my three bosses said, which one do you prefer? And I said, whatever you need. That's what I am. But I don't mind whatever you call me as long as you don't add that ED to color. So as long as I'm not the color analyst, I'm good, Coach.
Fantastic. Last 2 points, Adrian, real quick. Do you foresee, no one knows, but just a gut, look into your crystal ball. Do you foresee any NBA basketball within the next 2 or 3 months?
Yes, I do. Yes, I do, because the money. So now that you're seeing people, like I'm out walking as you're speaking and people are gathering, I don't think you're going to have the fans, but I do think they're going to finish the season. And I don't mind that it's going to finish in October, because really this would be the same time that we'd be celebrating the NBA Summer League. So
yeah.
The regular league just took over that Summer League pocket.
Mm-hmm.
So I've got no problem with it. And to tell you the truth, Coach, man, we got to get some stuff back, man, because folks are just burning down stuff and acting a fool. So we got to get some sports back. Idle time is workshop of the devil, man. So we got to get our communities back working and active and settle down some of this unrest.
I agree. And then, hey, look, the last question, and this is a personal one. when you on the set, you and the others, your own attire or they provide the wardrobe for you?
Yeah, yeah, that's a good question. They provide the wardrobe for me in the form of my wife because I can't dress nothing, Coach. I ain't even going to lie. I asked my kids, I said, what is my style? I don't have a style. Cause I said, whatever, it ain't going to be high waters. Now that's the style. You know, but back when we were there, high waters,
oh, no.
You got on high waters. But
no.
I had to have something that fits, you know. Give me something that fits, and I'm going to try to wear it with some respect. But now, whatever you see, Mama got it. I ain't even going to lie to you, Coach. I can't
wow.
dress nothing.
This has been great. And, Adrian, we always ask our guests who visit in the Coach's Corner to leave us with words of wisdom, parting shots. And, boy, you've just given us so much, so many words of wisdom today. But leave us with a final parting shot. Adrian Brandt.
Oh,
wow. Words of
I would
wisdom.
Love to. I would love to. One of my favorite sayings, don't walk in front of me, I may not follow. Don't walk behind me, I may not lead. Just walk beside me and be my friend.
Man. And, of course, Adrian, we got to talk real quick about Urban Coalition, because when I think of Adrian, two things come to mind, throwing the ball against the backboard and dunking, and Urban Coalition, man, where you would put up 40, 50, and 60s and not even break a sweat.
Oh, man, I loved it. It was a great time. I was young. I was pain-free, Coach. I wasn't in pain. Knees or back hurting, L4s hurting. But it was a lot of fun. So, I mean, you wanted to go out and establish yourself with the Ducky Vaughns and the Adrian Dantleys and the Greg Saunders and the Melvin's Crab House.
Mm,
so, man,
right.
Look, just as important as the ACC was or the Metro Conference, man, you wanted to show JoJo Hunter, Billy Bryant. You wanted to show, man, that, look, I learned my lesson. So it was. I was very, very humbled to be a part of the D.C. family. I'm serious, Coach. I'm just really grateful to have been a part of the D.C. family.
Folks, simply one of the best. I know you've enjoyed it. This has been a real treat. I love you, man. Say hello to your family for me. And when you get back this way, give me a ring so we can break some bread together and tell some lies.
Absolutely. Crabs and go-go, Coach. Crabs and go-go. Let's do it.
and crabs and go-go. And I'm waiting for you. When you're breaking a play down on ESPN, use the word joint. Everything is a joint if you're from D.C. Not smoking, but anything, a car, a
man
sandwich, anything can be a joint. And that,
Yo,
and
man,
of course,
joint,
the
man.
Other D.C. word, and I'll let you go on this, is when you see somebody that's doing something that's not appropriate, don't call them a Bama.
Coach,
my man.
Y'all live close to my man.
Appreciate you, Adrian. Thank you.
Lots of love, Coach. Okay.
All right. And, folks,
bye-bye.
That was Adrian Branch visiting in the Coach's Corner. I know you enjoyed it. Tremendous, inspirational story. Simply one of the best. Up next, tomorrow, 7 p.m., will be Ronnie Hogue, McKinley Tech, University of Georgia. Ronnie Hogue was the Jackie Robinson of Southern College sports. He was the very first African-American scholarship athlete at the University of Georgia. So Ronnie Hogue will visit into the Coach's Corner. I want to thank our sponsors, Horton's Funeral Service, Dr. Edward T. Buford, the Athletic Republic Capital Region, and, of course, this show is always powered by the AfricanAmericanAthlete.com, and special props to the guy that makes me sound so good, my man, my producer, he is Rick Hampton Sr. So, until tomorrow, folks, make good decisions because life is hard, but it's even harder when you're stupid. We'll see you tomorrow in the Coach's Corner, and our guest will be Ronnie Hogue.